With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the final Clash of the Titles, Clashoween Countdown, the podcast that for the last time this October pits two horror movies with something in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. This week, in the red corner, you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout. I'm telling you why, because a terrifying murderous person thing is doing some murdering. We're not having a holly jolly holiday in 1974's Black Christmas. While in the blue corner, what better way to end our countdown to All Hallows Eve than in the company of its unofficial mascot? We're taking a trip to Haddonfield as we try and get behind the Shape's mask in 1978's Halloween.
Hello? Hello? Hey, quiet! It's him again! The Mona!
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil. I think he'll come back.
So it's a slasher sandwich this week, but which film will have the cut and thrust to be victorious? Let's find out. Welcome to the final Clash of the Titles, Clashoween Countdown.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders! Hello? 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 I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Bill.
I'm Chris.
Welcome to our final Clashoween as we end our countdown to the greatest night of the year with horror clashes to get you in the mood for All Hallows Eve. So soon. So sad. We're here already.
Yeah.
How's everyone feeling?
Good. Well, I mean, we're not quite there because we do have something coming on Halloween.
Sort of. I mean, I know.
Tinged with horror. We can't say what it is yet. Spoil it. But
yeah. I mean, all right.
The horror isn't ending this week.
It is. It absolutely is. But fine. All right. I'm not going to argue about it. How are you, Victoria?
I'm really well, thanks.
Cool.
Yeah.
How am I? Interesting question. Thanks for asking, team. I think I've eaten some bad mayonnaise.
Jesus!
You seem quite chipper for it.
Fuck off!
I'm putting on a brave face. My stomach is doing knots. It was mayonnaise that I believe has been...
Was off?
It was from a barbecue this summer, and I believe it sat out in the sun, and then I refrigerated it, and I ran out of my good mayonnaise, so I was like, I definitely want mayonnaise, so I'm going to run the gauntlet. And it was a bad...
call.
But was it? No, so it wasn't worth it. It sounds like it might have been worth it.
I'm in a bit of pain now, so if I rush out, you know why.
Oh, my God, because you're going to shit yourself.
It always comes out the front end. I very rarely go rear.
Do you know what? You're lucky, actually. Which would you prefer?
Always front end.
Always front.
I'm one of those people who can vomit just like and get straight back into the party. Yeah, it's just like evacuate and I'm good. Yeah. You know, people who vomit and then they're like, oh, I can't do anything. I have to lie down. Not me.
No.
Not me. Professional vomiter. Professional vomiter. Okay, so this is part one of Black Christmas versus Halloween. Chris's choices this week. What's the thinking, Tilzo?
Because we've done this for 3 years and we haven't done Halloween.
It's mad.
We've got to do Halloween. It's the first slasher, so it's an important piece of cinema history. Or is it?
No, the answer is no, it's not.
More on that today. Yeah, yeah. Also, I really want to do Halloween 3 and we can't do Halloween 3 until we've done Halloween.
Okay, wow.
And also, final reason is I very much want to hear your Loomis impression on Thursday and Vicky's Billy impression today. And if you aren't doing Billy today, Vicky, I'll be very disappointed.
Okay.
So lots of good reasons.
Plenty of reasons. What was the clue you gave on last week's show? Remind me.
Did I give a clue? Oh, it was something to do with it being Clash of the Festive Holiday Horrors.
I don't think it was, but all right, fine. You can't remember. I thought it's a special time of year or the
No, date. It was Clash of the Festive Horrors or Clash of the Holiday Horrors.
All right, fine. Horrors, yeah. All right, fine. It was. I take it back. Okay, and the clue on Twitter that you followed up with, it was a work of art, if I do say so myself. Not the content, but the way it was filmed.
All right.
It was epic.
So
was
good. You have to film
pan.
It twice.
All right.
You didn't say Slash loud enough.
Oh, my God. I'm not Frank Sinatra. I need more than one take.
It was simply Slash. Because I pretended I'd been for one, but it was because they're both slashers.
Just, I think sometimes we should just watch those clues, and I don't need to repeat them because they're visual clues, and they really work better in the social media setting. You can find them on our Twitter at ClashPod. So your guesses were discovered slashing their way through the competition on our Twitter at ClashPod. We're also on Instagram and TikTok at ClashPod with loads of saucy extras and videos from the show. Also, please do subscribe to our YouTube channel for some very funny videos. I got our editor's name wrong last week, so massive apologies, Banyabat. I don't know how I turned Banyabat into Chris. That's a massive swing from me. I guess you're always on my mind, Tilzo. So there we go. But he has created some wonderful videos. They're all on our YouTube channel. That's our Clash of the Titles YouTube channel. Anyway, congratulations, Rob McLean and Rich Cracknell, who got the right answer. But the first correct answer this week, well done, Peter White. Your prize is Filthy Billy. I thought you did. Nasty Billy. I'm going to kill you. So please enjoy that.
Don't steal Vicky's thunder.
No, please do.
Shall we do the connection section? Point of view shots from the killer.
Yeah, that is the first big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Murderous tableaus. They both create sort of artworks out of their murders.
Well, yeah, I get it. No, Vicky, you're not buying that.
You mean out of the bodies?
Yes.
Oh, I think it's voyeuristic and humiliating. But fine, it can be a tableau if you like.
She doesn't know art, Chris. That's a problem.
That's true. Phones. I got so sick of the sound of an old phone ringing. I watched these films really close together. And I was like, if I hear that noise one more time.
Well, you don't hear it anymore.
No, that's true.
Yeah, the sort of prank phone calls that aren't prank phone calls happens in both films.
Never seen the killer's face in either, really.
Are you going to do the one about...
You definitely see the killer's face in Halloween.
I don't know why I wrote that one down. You do, yeah. Which there's plenty to talk about that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take that one back. Bad call.
Halloween is the sequel to Black Christmas. Discuss.
Okay, it's not.
Okay.
Or
Chris.
Is it?
Girls dying until the end where a bloke dies.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
I think a bloke is the last person to be killed in both films.
No.
Michael Myers... Are you talking about Michael Myers?
Oh, no, he gets killed second to last in Halloween, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Bob, yeah, his girlfriend.
No,
gets
Linda,
hit next.
Linda, yeah.
Linda, with her boobs out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
both of the films end up back in the house looking around.
That's correct.
Now, when you said about tableaus, that's what I was thinking of because they do move through, don't they, to show the destruction.
Empty hallways, empty corridors, empty rooms. Yeah.
Oh, I've got one. So, Babysitters... So, Black Christmas is based around the urban legend of the babysitter and the man upstairs. It was at some point in its iteration. And when John Carpenter and Deborah Hill started on Halloween. It was called The Babysitter Murders.
Incorrect.
No, that's not incorrect.
It is incorrect. That's a myth, an urban myth. It was,
no!
I watched the man who came up with Halloween say in a documentary...
It was always called Halloween.
That's a lie. Well, it was never called The Babysitter
Murders.
The
other thing is, I did read that by the time they got the script, it was called Halloween. But then I read it in so many places that I've just parroted it as truth.
Yeah, and in the DVD, in the essay within the casing, it says that as well.
I'm just telling you.
Fair it's enough. Fine. Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
Long time ago. Mm. A lot changes in 40 years.
He's
memory
still alive. Erwin Yablans said it wasn't ever called that. I watched him say it. Are you calling the exec producer of Halloween a liar? Because he's still with us and he's very litigious.
No.
It's funny because in the book it says that it was called The Babysitter Murders until he suggested changing it to Halloween.
That's what I read!
So he's taking credit away from himself. Anyway, yeah, connection section done.
Yeah, did you want to go bigger on where the Black Christmas...
All right, so there's an interview with Bob... Is he called Bob Clark? Mm. Bollocks.
Yes,
yeah,
he is.
Sorry, I've just got a lot of last names. So he says he wasn't going to do a sequel to Black Christmas. Black Christmas came out, it didn't set the world on fire. But then he met John Carpenter, and John Carpenter said, oh, you know, are you going to do a sequel to Black Christmas? And he said no, but he's like, but if you did, what would it be like? And he's like, well, Billy has escaped from a mental institution, his words, goes back to the house and it starts all over again. And Bob Clark said, and I would call it Halloween. So there you go. But then I read lots of other interviews where he's like, there's no way that it was stolen. It's a completely organic idea. That is just a conversation that I had with John Carpenter at some point.
Yeah, 100%. That's what he said. He said, the truth is John didn't copy Black Christmas. He wrote the script, directed the script, did the casting. Halloween is his movie. And besides, the script came to him already titled anyway. He liked Black Christmas and he may have been influenced by it. But in no way did John Carpenter copy this idea.
Your Honour.
All right, then. Connection section done. So on Thursday, I'll be dealing with the Haddonfield Man of Mystery, Michael Myers, which means today V is saying Merry Black Christmas, everyone. V, take us on a journey.
Hi, I'm Billy, and I'll be home for Christmas, specifically in your home, specifically in the attic of your home, because that's the one place no one would ever think to look for me or the body of your friend I've murdered, even though there's an open hatch to said attic and a ladder that I've been shimmying up and down at will. Handily, there's a sort of groupthink that renders the attic invisible to absolutely everyone, including all the police, who will fail to check the attic, even if after they found three bodies in the house. I'll also make obscene phone calls to lovely, boring Jess and talk about babies and warts and abortions and, I'm not Billy. I'm Horrible Peter, Jess's dickhead boyfriend. And I've been murdering everyone and taunting Jess on the phone, screaming and howling about Agnes. And oh, no, wait, maybe the timeline doesn't quite work. Maybe Peter isn't Billy. Peter is just Peter and Billy is still in the house. Let's ask the one person who might be able to confirm that and clear it all up. I mean, if we're not going to search the house properly, at least we can interview the final girl. But oh no, we can't, because even though she's 100% murdered someone, for which she should probably go to prison or at least hospital for a bit, she's drugged without her consent and left alone in a murder house and an attic full of corpses. I've never seen anything like it. You must... Enough for now, Missy. You take the... What do they give her? Like, morphine? That's enough. See you in the morning.
He needs to sleep it off.
Yeah. But they're like, we can't believe she killed him.
She was...
Have these drugs.
I'm going to just mow it, Kevin. She was a hysterical woman.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
That's just a woman, Alex.
Okay, so this is my first watch. But I'd heard of the remix, but I wasn't very aware of this, to be honest.
No. Me neither. This is a first watch for me. I was sort of aware of it because I kept getting phone calls going, blah, Black Christmas, blah, blah, Black Christmas, that all came from Chris's number.
Apologies.
Yeah. So
I wanted you to watch it.
Yeah, yeah, and here we are.
I'd barely heard of this until I started at Hot Dog, when people were fans of slasher movies on that magazine, and we did a lot of stuff on Halloween, and I thought, oh, I should check out this other one, and watched it, and I was super excited because I was like, it's not the first slasher. This is the first slasher. They copied everything. I can't believe it. This and I was annoyed and realised everyone else knew that as well. So, yeah, I thought it'd be exciting to put them side by side. So I haven't watched it since then, but I remember being absolutely bloody terrified by this film the first time I watched it.
Were you? How old did you say you were?
22?
Okay.
23?
Do we not count Psycho as a slasher then?
I do.
Well, no. Of course, and there are variations. Psycho is a good example. Peeping Tom.
Yep.
most famously by Michael Powell. And then, of course, the Italian cinema, the Giallos, were making a lot of films that were like this. I guess what these films did different that separates them and makes them the modern slasher, I think, is they made them about teens, aimed at teenagers. Mm. And that's what we think of the modern slasher as. So that's, sure, yeah, that's, I think, the difference.
I think that is fair. Well, let me tell you a small piece about this film, yes?
Mm, please do.
All right, so it was written by Roy Moore, based on the urban legend of the babysitter and the man upstairs, which I only know from Point Horror books, but I don't know if you are familiar with.
I don't know where I know it from, but I'm fully aware of it. It was a story that I was told, yes, by people to scare me about, yeah, the phone call coming into the house. But there was, like, I did a bit of reading about it, and all the different variations, there's like a billion different variations, yeah, of the same theme.
Yeah. I think the key point is that it's the phone calls that are coming from inside the house. That's the scary part of that story. And then, but he also took his inspiration from, there's a true story of a boy who killed his family as well. So there's a lot of sort of gruesome inspiration, as well as false stories about, you know, there is no babysitter and man upstairs kind of thing. So that, like I said, it was called The Babysitter. Then it was rewritten and all the action is moved to a university, and it was called Stop Me. And then producer director Bob Clark wanted it to be less of, it was actually quite a straightforward slash up. So he apparently added in, he dialed back the murder stuff, as in less gruesome, I guess, although it kind of ramps up, it's gruesome. I think Barb's death is pretty nasty. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't think there's any penetration in it. Like, I don't think you ever see a knife go into a person.
No, that's a good point.
There's hardly any blood as well in this film. It's
No.
I think it's leaving a lot to the imagination, more than even Halloween does.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because he thought that it was too violent. And he gets credit for doing a lot of the characterisation. So that bit where Barb, who's Margot Kidder, she's got maybe some drinking issues, but she gets to do a lot of like fun drunken rants. And it's obviously a little bit sad because she's got like abandonment issues and stuff. But stuff like that, you know, Bob Clark put in. And I did read that it was his idea that you'd never see the killer. So you see Billy's eye, or Peter's, or whoever it is.
Scary moment.
Really scary.
Really scary.
Wide open, like frantic eye. And Roy Moore apparently didn't want to go along with it. But I do think, you know, it's obviously brilliant. Yeah, and I think Michael Myers is very, very scary because you can see him but can't see him. But I think this might be scarier.
It's weird though, because there's a moment where you do see his legs and he is wearing flares, which obviously at the time people were like, yeah, of course, it's the 70s. Yeah. But when you see it in the modern light of day.
Someone lightened up a picture, the only image you get of him in the film. That's what he looks like. I'll put that on our Twitter.
Oh, is my God. Billy?
Yeah, when you can see him in the sort of bauble or something, he gets reflected and someone lightened that image.
Wow.
I found it on Reddit.
That's amazing.
So that's what he looks like. If you want it spoiled, I'll stick it on our Twitter. After.
Weirdly, he looks quite scary.
Yeah.
Even though he's got a very 70s BG style haircut, he still looks menacing. Yeah, stick that on the Twitter.
So Olivia Hussey as Jess. Like I said, I didn't know much about this film, but then when I realised Olivia Hussey was in it, I was almost like, I can't watch it, because we got made to watch Romeo and Juliet so many times at school that I almost can't look at that woman's face. Not her fault, a good film. Franco Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet. And she's great in it, but they just, I don't think they could be shitted to take us through the book. So they were like, just watch it on the telly. So we watched it so many millions of times. And it's boring if you're 30.
Yeah, but a pretty big star, really.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And quite a big departure from if you knew her from Romeo and Juliet, which most people would have.
I mean, yeah, apart from, do you mean because she's pregnant?
Because it's a horror film.
Well, no, I know, but she's quite innocent, isn't she?
Sure, her character's not that different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you read why she decided to do the part?
I have such short shrift for fucking bollocks like this. I read, tell me what you read, she signed on because she had a psychic, and the psychic told her, very specific, you will make a film in Canada that would earn you a great deal of money. So she was like, cool, where's it shooting? Canada. Brilliant. Who knows? I mean, anyone that has a psychic, I have no sympathy for you. You get what you deserve kind of thing.
I found a quote from Margot Kidder saying, she said, the film was fun. I really bonded with Andrea Martin filming in Toronto and Ontario. Olivia Hussey was a bit of an odd one. She was obsessed with the idea of falling in love with Paul McCartney through her psychic. We were a little hard on her for things like that.
I don't think Margot Kidder ever pulled any punches. So
no.
I bet that was rough.
Yeah. So Margot Kidder's in it. Lynn Griffin as Claire. I read an interview with her where she she said she's joking, but she told the producers that she was a really good swimmer and could hold her breath, so that she'd be wrapped in plastic for quite a long time, and that she could pull that off. And then Nick Mancuso, the almost Indiana Jones. So you've told us that story before, haven't you? He's Chris. You know, you told us a story about an actor that went to audition for Indiana Jones, but his hat fell off or something. Was that Nick Mancuso?
No, no, it was someone that got a big role in something else.
Yeah. Tom Selleck.
I can't remember who.
Was it? No, it can't be.
I mean, he famously was up for Indiana Jones, but couldn't get out of Magnum PI.
Yes. So anyway, Nick Mancuso does the voices, and when he auditioned, he did it with his back to the director so that he could just do the... And I think the voices are just insanely good. And I liked this. Nick Mancuso said that some of the ways he achieved those voices was to do it upside down, which is what I told you, if you don't have to do this anymore. But back in the day when you had to pull a sickie, you hang upside down off your bed and you always sound weird and ill. You don't ring in sick anymore because we're too old, and also the internet is a thing.
Yeah. You don't want to sound like Billy when you call it.
No, but like back when you had a shitty pub job.
You're going to put your tongue where?
So, which I quite like. It didn't do very well. It's now, you know, it's easy to see. It's a cult classic. I think it probably does earn that title.
It did
because
all right,
of,
didn't it?
Yeah, it
did
all right. It it made money.
Yeah. It just didn't get as much plaudits as Halloween did, which could be said it was Halloween was quite inspired by it.
Did you ever think it was taking place in America? It's one of these weird films, I think, that's so obviously Canadian that never for a second do I think it's set in America, even though they tried by putting, like, stars and stripes on a desk in the police station.
I was going to ask you that.
They're playing ice hockey. They've got Canadian accents. It just feels Canadian.
And I don't really have the ear for it. You know when you watch American talk shows or whatever and they're like, hey, get this Canadian on, listen to this. And they're, like, killing themselves laughing because he says moose or something. I actually can't hear it. I'm like, you just sound like you're from the US.
Canadians sound like Terrence and Philip and American Scum.
I just
hey Philip, what's that to boot?
I don't know.
That's Canadian.
Yeah. But anyway, what's the police officer in this? That's the most Canadian voice I've ever heard in my entire life. And it's fucking freezing. And so yeah, I never for one second thought that.
Fair enough.
Okay, shall we talk about the film? All right, so the sorority house, here we are. It's Christmas. The lights are super twinkly.
Oh, it's beautiful. It looks like the front of a Christmas card.
It does. And Silent Night is playing, and that's the best Christmas carol. So what could possibly go wrong?
I'm obviously just trying to think if that is the best Christmas carol.
We've had this conversation before, and it's fair to revise it. For me, it is. It's the gold standard.
I know what the worst is, which is Away in a Manger.
Why is that the worst? Because it's Jersey.
Manger. Oh, it's not a word that you use regularly,
so
I just find it a weird word now.
I tell you what I read. Sorry, I know that we should keep it tight. A really interesting article about what there are some words that only survive. They're really old words, and they only survive because they're part of like a phrase that you wouldn't use, and you don't use the word in any other way apart from the phrase. So, for instance, when you say kith and kin, you never say kith outside of kith and kin. So there's loads of phrases like that.
Give us a kith.
Right. Jesus.
Come on. It's one of those.
Anyway, I'll send you the article. It's really interesting.
He liked that.
Look at your teeth. Look at you. You got a tooth smile. Cute. Yeah.
I nearly gave you a kith.
That is right up his street, to be fair. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. That was a little sidebar. So anyway, we've got a super famous point of view shot. Not famous from this film, but famous nonetheless.
It's mad, isn't it? When I saw this, because I know Chris has said, I think there's a lot of similarities. And I was like, well, we'll see about that. Yeah. Bloody hell. The whole opening, when he even sort of looks up to the window and sees people through the glass.
These crackers.
And the breathing as well. I think the breathing here is kind of scarier, though, because it's a slight wheeze
to raggedy,
it.
But also, they had the technology by the time Halloween rolled around, because we talked about on the Rocky episode, that Panavision camera, whatever.
Panaglide.
Panaglide was invented for Rocky, pretty much, in between these two movies. But here, they had to build a special rig so that the cameraman could do the shots. But also, he's climbing the trellis himself, that cameraman. And cameras were big back then. They weren't like our iPhones. So I'm all power to the cameraman for not dying on this film.
I mean, and like you say, you know, he's lurching. So you understand you're in a POV shot. So you understand that the person, and then he steals the trellis, and that this him is going to get into the house, but the lurching and the, and he's got something to, I've talked to you about this before. It's, do you know what, when I say sticky voice, do you know what I mean? And I'm doing it leaning back from the microphone. So it's my...
Tacky. That sort of tackiness where you don't just have enough saliva.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you get the little bits of the flecks of white in either corner.
And it does
well.
Happen to everyone, but there are some people that do a lot of public speaking that naturally don't have enough saliva. And once you've heard sticky voice and you're watching Newsnight or whatever, it, you can't unhear it. And it's, and he's got sticky breath. Gross. Mm. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I was watching this thinking he was going to be a friend pulling a prank, one of the boyfriends at the start. I was like, he's not going to be the killer. And then obviously, I was wrong.
You were wrong. And then he goes into the scary attic TM. So I get it, because it's like, yeah, it's an attic. Why is there a chair covered in cobwebs? And why is there a rocking horse? Like, I understand, it's a sorority house, but they're not children. So why are there several rocking horses?
Could have been left there from the previous owners who sold it to the university to become a sorority house.
Yeah. I mean, I like the fact there's a
rocking
chair.
That's a really fact-based answer. That is legitimately how there could be an old carousel horse in there.
And also, could the rocking chair not be homage to Psycho? I mean, she ends up in the rocking chair at the end up there.
She's in the rocking chair quite a lot, isn't
she?
Yeah.
So feels like it's in the same universe.
So let's meet the girls. The girls, Claire, Phil, Jess and Barb. So they're having a party. But Mrs. Mack, the housewoman, I didn't know what a housewoman was because I don't understand the fraternity sorority system. But it basically took me a while to get who Mrs. Mack is.
Same here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, who is she? Why is she hiding
someone's
bottles
Nana?
Of booze in cut-out books?
Yeah. Especially because Barb is like carrying around a decanter. Mm. She's got no shave. So I was like, well, why do you need to sneak your booze?
But she's all about the sherry.
Yeah. Yeah, but also, again, she would smell of sherry.
No, she'd smell of the toilet from which the sherry has come. toilet sherry. So she's got it in the cistern at the back.
Oh, I know, it's so good when she fishes it out of the loo.
She's quite the character, isn't she, Mrs. Mack?
She's fantastic. Yeah. She's absolutely fantastic.
Everyone called my nan Mrs. Mack, so I felt close to her.
These girls would hump the Leaning Tower of Pisa if they could get up there.
And there's the start of... I was listening to our episode we did about... Oh my God, I've forgotten what it's called. Near Dark. And you were making me laugh about foreshadowing when Caleb's like, can I have a bite of that? What, a bite? No, you can't have a bite. And that did make me laugh. But someone at this point says, can we get all the men out? And so they clear all the men out of the house, but obviously not everyone, not every man, because our weird tacky breath person is in the attic already. That, again, is foreshadowing. Mm.
Are you going to call him tacky breath person? Call him Billy?
I'll call him Billy.
Okay.
Yeah. You two obviously want to just do it. Just do 2 minutes on it.
Agnes. Baby, don't touch the baby.
They're removing the wood. They're removing the wood.
I'm going to kill you.
I think we should have a break now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, I think this film does a very good job of, which slashes is not really my thing. Like,
no,
I don't.
I'm with you. It's not my thing either. No. It's a weird genre to really love.
Yeah, I think if we're going to do it, these two are the best ones that we're going to do. I mean, but I do like Scream actually.
Scream is the best one.
Yeah, because it's so self-reflexive and postmodern and all the rest of it. But I don't love them because I don't get much character work. I just get women's bodies, and there's not much there for me. But this film,
it sounds brilliant.
This film is good for me because we get some really good characterization for a slasher film, especially with Barb. So Barb's mum doesn't want her home for the holidays.
You're a gold-plated whore.
That's awesome.
What a line.
What a line. I thought, I'll have that off you, Barb. Yep. That's fantastic. So we get this is the first of the prank calls, the obscene calls. And as you have done such... Do you want to do it
no,
again?
No, Vicky, it's
just,
your turn.
I'll just describe it. Sucking, screaming, no, gibbering, snorting.
In the voice.
I don't even think I can do
just,
it.
Just try.
I'm not going to try.
Try.
No.
Try.
And try.
No.
Do it. Come on, are you scared?
Yeah. I don't want to sound like it's it.
My problem with the phone calls isn't what Billy does, which is absolutely fantastic. Honestly, it's just great, great gibbering and everything you said. My problem is that... I think at some point, what's Olivia Hussey's character called?
Jess.
I think at some point, Jess needs to become aware that if someone doesn't say hello in the first 3 seconds, it's definitely Billy. Because there is about 10 times this movie where she goes, hello, hello. Hello, and you're like, it's obviously, I know it's Billy, so you, hello, hello, and you're just like, come on, Jess.
Yeah. I mean, I think this first, right, two things. The first call is obscene. But the other calls aren't obscene.
That's, is this the sticking the tongue in various places?
And you're going to do this and all the rest of it. No, so because it's obscene, the girls are kind of transfixed by it, which you would be. But Barb's reaction is really believable because she's maybe the more, not confident, it's a false confidence.
Well, she's a city girl.
Yes, yeah, so she's kind of used to it, I guess, or she does.
She's more sophisticated,
like that.
Yeah, and she's used to giving men grief or whatever, and so, and receiving it. And
I
so, yeah.
Call him the Mona. It's the Mona.
Yeah, and so two terrible things.
It would have been a good name for a slasher villain, would be the Mona, but it doesn't really catch on here.
Yeah, and it sounds a bit like an old lady, you know, the Mona. I don't know. Anyway. But, so two awful things. Because we set the calls up as obscene, when they're not obscene, you're completely wrong-footed because you're in a sort of place of safety, which is like you understand what to expect, and then you just get this horrible stuff about the baby and Agnes. But also, as you have done a very fine impression of already, it's all this nonsense, and it's hard to make out what he's saying, and then just says really calmly, calm as day, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
That's so good.
It's really
good. It's just all this noise, and then, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, but it's just really calm, really nice. Not threatening, just a statement of fact.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's a man of his word.
Yeah. So then, poor old professional virgin Claire, she's the first to get it. And the bastard's only in her wardrobe. Hello,
nice.
Halloween.
What a reversal, because normally the virgin survives, but yes. Actually this time, the rules are out the window.
Well, there weren't rules. That's the thing. The rules came afterwards. This is the first one, and he did it the opposite way around.
Yeah. She's also, that's what's good about this, she's not, in terms of movie language, she's not perfect because she's seeing a boy and you live in a sorority house. You're not really supposed to be doing that, but she is. But she's only a professional virgin according to Barb, and you can't really take her word for...
Cannot. I can love Barb.
Yeah, she's
I would
great.
Love Full to have a drink with Barb.
Talk about turtle.
Just
if you were 8 years old, you might be able to, because she likes dishing it out to the kids.
Amazing. Where she actually feeds a kid booze.
Yeah, that's such a strange moment.
It's great.
It is. There's part when there's like, okay, Barb, you've gone too far now. That's unacceptable. Mm. But yeah.
It's not. It's the fact that no one stops her, because people are there.
Yeah.
Like Claire's dad is watching. And I was just like, fucking brilliant.
So I'm never sure. Like, I don't think I've got a high tolerance for horror films, but I get more scared of like creepiness rather than if I'm expecting blood or got like I couldn't watch Hostel. You know, like I can't deal with that. But I really, but like, Don't Look Now is
next week. Yes.
So because I know that there's going to be slashing and maybe blood and all the rest of it, that's where my brain was. And I was like, this isn't going to scare me. It's just going to make me go, oh, it's a bit yucky. But then when he wraps Claire in plastic, that's when I suddenly understood why it was an 18. And if I'd watched this when I was younger, that would have frightened the shit out of me. Like, I was watching this on a train, and it's that the bit in plastic with her mouth open is the only bit that I got really self-conscious of my screen. It's like, there are other people that can see this and they're going to wonder what I'm watching.
Is it also the fact that because it is the first slasher, or the first of its ilk in the slasher genre, it just, like, it wrong-foots you every time because you are so accustomed to the rules that we've grown up with, the Scream rules, and this doesn't follow them. And because of that, you're it makes you more on edge because you're not going, and I know what's going to happen here. Oh, I know. Yeah. It's going to follow this trope.
It feels much more naturalistic, I think. The performances feel much more naturalistic than what came after. And then it feels more real, I think. The murders, they're quite slowly, and it's drawn out, and it feels like how it would look and feel in real life. And exactly. So
because there's not a supernatural thing as well, like Michael Myers very quickly just can perform his little vanishing act and you're like, what's going on there? It just doesn't follow the rules of physics, let alone the rules of a slasher movie. So in this, it does genuinely feel like a mad guy wandering around a house from his point of view shot, looking down the stairs, climbing back up into the attic. It all feels horribly feasible.
An issue for me was talking of climbing up into the attic. Claire dies in her bedroom because that's her wardrobe, and he comes at her through the dry cleaning or whatever it is. So I thought she was in her bedroom for quite a lot of the rest of the film.
Oh.
So it's like, why the fuck has no one gone to her bedroom? Like, you've mounted a full search, but you haven't gone to her room. Then later on, it's clear that she's in the attic because he's put her in the chair. But there is this ladder, but it's a vertical ladder. So what's he's put a dead body on his back and shimmied up the ladder, yes? Yeah. That's quite hard work.
He's got mad person strength.
That's true.
It's different strength.
Yeah. But still, no one goes to... We'll come back to this a lot because I agree with what you're saying. It's quite realistic and quite naturalistic for the genre. You know, a man is looking for his daughter. They just never go in the attic. And I just think, you know, she could... Because it's an open hatch and it's Christmas, there's a conversation. It's like, maybe she went to get some Christmas decorations. Maybe she fell over. So we should check the attic. Like, it annoyed me that no one just thought to clear off that bit of script. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it looks like the attic isn't really... Like, people aren't even aware of it. Like you say, there's a chair up there with cobwebs on. It's full of junk.
But also because the hatch is open, that's the only thing that bothered me about it. So he's always looking down over an open hatch. And if it had a door, that would make more sense.
Okay.
We talked about Mrs. Mack and fishing her sherry out of the toilet.
Her death's good, isn't it?
It's really good because it's funny at first and then you realise she's still alive with the hook in her. So it is quite funny because she's such a good actor. She does that uh-oh eyes when she sees Claire.
What?
And then this hook comes and I was laughing. And then, you know, normally the sound mix is so good that you can hear her on the hook and then you feel bad for laughing and it is really gruesome and very scary. So I said about this subplot with, like, Claire's dad. And this was... I thought this was a fun
He doesn't... I think the film... And we can talk about this because this feels like a whodunit.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and that's... When we come to it, that's where this film falls down. Let's not do it now, but that is genuinely where this film falls down. But because Claire's dad seems very, very calm about everything, you put him on your little mental suspects list because he is not as nervous as he should be, and he clearly hates the lifestyle of these girls. So who's to say that he isn't the one who's doing
the
killing?
It's just like gone mad,
Equally, I feel very sorry for him. It's quite hard watching this, knowing we know that his daughter's dead and he doesn't. And it's just sad for an hour, this poor man wandering around. We know this bad news is coming to him.
Not if you think he's the killer.
Yeah. I mean, I think his attitude to the way that the sorority house is run, because we love Mrs. Mack because she's funny, whether or not we may be judging her for her drinking and maybe people were more harsh about her drinking at the time. But she's doing a comedy performance, and when she's covering up the picture of the naked couple
She protects
like
her girls.
Yeah, so we like her. So when he judges her, we're on the side of the girls straight away. So we don't think of this house as like a den of sin for which the girls get the punishment that they deserve. We feel like they should survive and they should be protected. And it's because we've got a good anchor on the other side of that moral equation, which is the judgy dad kind of thing. Whereas without that, you don't throw it into relief quite as much, I don't think. So I think that is a very clever touch. Mrs. Mack, you know, her girls are just having fun. But Jess has had too much fun
because
she's pregnant with Peter's baby.
Oh, my God, Peter. Oh.
Peter, I'm pregnant.
So Peter's been there a while. He's at college. He's been studying music for a long time.
He hasn't slept for three nights, Chris.
But he's 38 years old, the man.
It's so upsetting.
It's just cracking.
When he says to her later, I don't want to queue behind six people for a bath. And it's like, God, you shouldn't. You disgusting man.
You know, because obviously all the women are in their 20s, but you can kind of believe it. But this is clear. He's old. He just looks like her dad.
This is an interesting viewpoint that I took a few days after I'd watched it. Jess goes to tell Peter that she's pregnant, and it establishes, because there is a, she says to him, I wasn't even going to tell you. And you're like, why the fuck did you tell him? Like, you don't want his opinion necessarily. You're just doing the right thing, quote marks. And we get to see that he's bad because he's like, you can't make a decision like that and all the rest of it. But then later on, it is the day of his recital and she could have told him at any point and she seems too innocent. But I was like, are you fucking with him? Which is great because he deserves it. But you could have told him tomorrow and you could have told him yesterday. But he's like, babe, I'd literally have to do this thing tonight.
Yeah. And it does. It messes it up for
and
him.
And he messes it up.
And what do you do when you mess up a recital?
You smash the piano.
Smash it up with a sledgehammer that you have with you.
The recital might be important to him, but being pregnant is important to her.
But it's also, she's not saying, I need help. I need money. I need your validation. She's just like, just FYI, I'm pregnant and I would like an abortion. So tell him tomorrow.
So when he says to her, you selfish bitch, are you on her side?
No, I'm never on his side because he's a bad dude.
He's awful, isn't he?
He's awful.
Why have you brought a sledgehammer to the recital, Peter? Why have you got that with you?
So another phone call. And like we said, they change and they're not obscene. And we hear a variety of different voices from Billy. So the backstory to Billy, according to Bob Clark, is not what I thought. When I heard it, I was like, oh, Billy, Agnes was his baby sister.
So,
go on.
Just to clarify, this isn't in the film. This is some research you've done outside the film, because we never, ever get any backstory to Billy in the film.
No, it's
right,
outside
okay.
of it with an interview with Bob Clark. But when you watch the film, you try and join the dots, don't you? And you think you can
hear... Well, you wouldn't if you hadn't had that interview with Bob Clark. I mean, you mean just from what Billy says?
Just from what Billy says, I thought Agnes was an actual infant. And especially because then they try and thread the needle with, like, Peter's got this weird thing about actual babies, not children. Do you know what I mean? Mm. He says, you can't kill the baby, and that all comes up later. I thought Billy was in charge of Agnes one day, a baby, and killed her. And so Billy wears... I thought, I'm sure I heard him saying, where's the baby?
He says, you left Agnes alone with the baby, kill the baby, what have you done with the baby?
So according to Bob Clark, this backstory for Billy, but this could have changed over the years, who knows? Billy is abusive. Billy abused his little sister and was abused himself and killed his parents, probably, but then locked Agnes up in a basement for 5 or 6 years and she escaped, and Billy doesn't like girls and it turns out Agnes doesn't like boys. So she's not a baby. So she's like this captured sister in the basement.
But she's not around in this movie.
No.
Okay.
No. Okay, so at this point, this is where I started to get... I know what I'm like and I know I'm a pedant, but I found it really frustrating. So Barb and Phil and Claire's dad go to the police rather than search the whole house. And it does drive me mad.
This attic
thing
is
going to be mentioned.
Jeez.
Yeah.
It's fine. They didn't check the attic.
It's fine if I don't know that Claire's body's up there, but I understand the anguish of watching a man search for his daughter who's dead. But script-wise, I know what happened. So all these people going, where's Claire? Where's Claire? Where's Claire? She's in the attic. It's just do me a favour and just someone go, we couldn't possibly look in the attic. And I mean, I'm all in. It's fine. But you just
Because I don't think they think she's dead at this point. I think she's just missing.
Yeah, but even more fucking annoying because you know she's not.
I don't think you'd ever think, well, she might have gone up to the attic. I literally, if you hadn't brought it up, I would never have had a problem with them not searching the attic.
But what about you knowing she's dead and them not knowing she's dead, irrespective of where her body is?
But that's fine.
No, it's not. It's fine for a bit and then it's just annoying. It's too. And then even by the bloody end, they're like, well, Claire's around somewhere, I guess. Like, fuck me. Like, go in the attic now. There's three corpses downstairs. Surely it's the job of the police to do a full search.
I don't know why. I was fine with it.
To be honest, I have a similar issue with Halloween. So there's parity.
Okay.
I can tell you now, or we could just...
Go on then.
I'm Dr. Loomis. There's a madman in that house. How about you go in the fucking house then with a SWAT team and just get him? Like, get a warrant. It's not a problem. Your death has come to your town, sir, or whatever.
You mean the Myers house?
Yeah. He's like, he even goes to the graveyard. Judith's grave is gone. get to the fucking house.
He doesn't. He checks the house. And
but we're there with a team, with an army.
He does wait there.
Not himself.
If anything, that's the most annoying thing, the fact that Loomis stands by a house for 90% of Halloween.
That's true. But I mean, where is the armed response unit? He's a madman and he's escaped.
We can talk about this. I have a theory about Halloween where Loomis does not come out of it well. Should we alert the local TV and news stations? No. Don't do that. That kind of makes you culpable, yeah, Loomis. You've got blood on your hands.
Maybe that's what it is. Just a quick question, because I wasn't sure. So Peter does his piano recital. Did he play a discordant song to be really contemporary, or did he just really fuck up a classical standard, but really fucked it?
Yeah, he totally fucked it because Jess.
Okay, yeah, fair enough then. I thought he was experimenting with something, bit of Philip Glass, bit of whatever, but no, he was just trying to do Beethoven's Fifth and was like, can't.
Yeah, he was trying to play chopsticks. I don't think it would work if he tried something experimental and they hadn't liked it. It wouldn't fit with anything. We need to believe that Peter has at this point failed because of Jess's news.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why he's motivated to kill her.
Okay. So another girl has gone missing. This is an actual child. I'm not being judgy, but I think slasher films, like, if you've had sex and you're a girl, you're over 16, then you're going to get killed. Mm. And you contrast that with an actual child with a concerned mother who's 13. But then in the 70s, you know, I'm obsessed with like true crime podcasts and stuff like that. If you were 13 and you went missing, a police officer was liable to go, she's just run away. Like, there wasn't as much of a feeling of protectiveness over under 16s, maybe.
What's the point of this subplot?
I am unsure, actually, right. Now you've said that.
I didn't understand what the point was. Does Billy kill the girl in the park? In which case, has he popped out of the attic with is it a chainsaw where you just hear a saw running or something and you never see the body? You just see them going,
Yeah, that is awful.
Yeah, it's fine, it does sound like a chainsaw, but I just don't understand the relevance of this whole search for this little girl and how it ties into plot A.
The other confusing element is the search in the park when they find Janice's body is for Janice. Because Janice's mum is there and the police officer says, we're here to find a little girl. Yeah. Off we go. Then Peter comes round to the sorority house and says to Jess, like, where have you been? And she's like, there was a search for Claire, so I had to go on it. Mm. So is that just a mistake, or was she lying because she couldn't say to her boyfriend, who is controlling and weird, I just went on a search for a random 13-year-old girl. It had to be for Claire, or was it for both of them?
No idea.
Who knows?
In the same way, I don't know who the guys who feel like they've walked out of a Carry On film are in the third act, where they stick their head round the back door and go, we're on the search for the girl.
I never understand scenes like that. You see scenes like that where women are fucking titillated by stuff that isn't funny. Mm. So Jess and Phil, they're like, oh my God, those men are so funny. Oh, I'd rather be with the murderer. And it's like, what? What did I don't know. Am I so cynical? But if Barb was still alive, she'd have shut the door in their face.
Of course she would.
They're like, whoa, that's so entertaining. I think this is a little bit of bad writing. Mrs. Mack now at this point is all alone and just really quickly he's like, oh, P.S. when you get back, I won't be here. So because I'm going to my sister's. It's never been mentioned before, but it's very important. So we spoke about Mrs. Mack gets it with the hook, which is awful. And we talked about Mrs. Mack's death noises. And it's also the same with Barb. Like, you see that horrible glass unicorn thing go in her. Mm. Or you see the action of the unicorn. It's a weird thing to say. But you hear a lot of good death noises, I think.
There's a great bit where Billy, it's another POV shot. After he's killed Mrs. Mack, he goes mad in the attic and just starts smashing stuff up. And you really get a feel, even without seeing him, all from his POV, just how crazy angry he is.
Yeah.
He's like, it's amazing to like build up an image of a killer without ever seeing him, which is just this sort of uncontrolled rage.
You were talking about Barb's death though, and I think what's scarier than Barb's death is Jess, cutting to Jess and they're having to stand there while Christmas carolers are singing and all those faces looking at you. And it's like, what? It just made me think, what is Christmas caroling about? I don't want to stand here while
you're all looking at me.
And I'm looking at you and just go away.
But she's so sweet. She's like, oh, children. And they're just going, ba, 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 forever, though. And it never stops. You'd be like, just have some money and go away now, please.
Hey, you wouldn't answer the door these days. Bunch of kids going, yeah, get your fucking money.
So up until this point, the girls haven't mentioned to the police they're getting these phone calls, but now they do. My favourite moment is the world's shittest marriage proposal from Peter to Jess. It's so the dialogue's brilliant. I'm quitting the conservatory. Oh, Peter, you can't quit the conservatory. I'm quitting the conservatory and we're getting married. Fucking awesome. Like the old 1-2. I thought it was brilliant.
It feels very progressive. It actually reminded me of Dawn of the Dead when she turns down his proposal.
Yeah.
Just because she's pregnant and he thinks it's what he's supposed to do. But she's great. She's
same
like
year, 1978. Big year for turning down marriage proposals.
74.
Oh, shit. Sorry, Halloween.
But she's great there, isn't she? She's like, I want to live my life. You wanted to do your thing. I still want to do my things. We're not getting married.
And also, it's so unappealing to marry Peter as well. Like, you know, he could paint this pretty picture of like, we'll get a house and we'll do this and we'll have holidays and it'll be lovely and we could be a real family. And you think, oh, okay.
Also,
but you can't be alone with him.
He's dead 20 years before you because he's basically your dad.
Anyway, Lieutenant Fuller, we haven't mentioned John Saxon, he takes these phone calls very seriously. So we get an old school phone tap, which I love.
It's brilliant.
So good. Very ineffective.
Just wandering back around and forth.
Which one is it? But I love the idea that, well, I wish I could have watched it in 1974 and been like, this is so exciting and technologically advanced.
It would have been great to know how it worked, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was unclear why one tap worked and the other didn't and what he was actually looking for on those massive machines.
Because I did the research before I watched the film, I understood that the calls were coming from within inside the house. But it does do a good script job, even though it's a bit like, they mention the second line and it's just dismissed by everybody. So did you register that? Like, as in, they're in the police station and someone goes, what about this phone? Oh, no, don't worry, it's a separate line. And everyone goes, okay, cool. Mm. And that's fine, because obviously it is that second line. But I think it's good that you mention it in the script in order for the characters to dismiss it.
I can't believe that you do your research on a film before watching it.
You spoil the film for
that's
you.
That's mad.
Because what was great about watching this the first time when I watched it was that I thought there were two people and that there was someone outside he was working with and maybe it was Peter. And so that someone's doing the calls while he's doing the kills.
Yeah, it probably is a mistake. It's just not all the time.
No, it is. There's no probably about it. It's a terrible
years.
Idea.
Oh, 3 years.
Do you always do it? I thought it was just for this
Do you
movie.
Read the Wikipedia's no, plot before you
no,
watch the film?
No, I don't. Because I don't look at the plot bit because I don't want to ruin it for myself if I haven't seen it, but I will do some research. Yeah, because sometimes I like to see it in action on the screen.
Right.
Like, oh, this changed.
But you're not really enjoying the film.
Sorry, was I asking for feedback on my process?
I'm just surprised. This is just an honest reaction. I'm just giving you how I feel.
An honest?
We're not annoyed.
Reaction.
We're not annoyed. We're just disappointed.
It's fine.
It's working, isn't it? Like...
Well, we don't know. We've never seen it the other way.
That's true.
We have nothing to compare it to. Perhaps if you watched the film first.
I would be really good at this job.
We'd be the top one of the top movie podcasts in the country.
We are.
Already busking.
But we're going to be even more top.
Yeah. Okay. I'm fine. I won't take those notes, but cool. Thanks. It's all the same. Anyway.
Well, have a think about it.
Anyway, Barb is murdered with a shit glass unicorn. Did you notice the wreath on her door with the miniatures in it?
No.
She's got a Christmas wreath, but it's got little bottles of booze in it rather than baubles, which is really lovely.
Oh, that's the advent calendar I want this
year.
Yeah.
So Jess and Phil don't think anything of it, which is fine because Barb had a very vocal asthma attack. I think that's all good. Later on, I'm a little bit annoyed because the caller upstairs is screaming his head off and it's Jess can't hear.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
That really I agree screaming. With. Yeah. You definitely would go, hang on 1 second. Hello, Billy. Billy.
Are you and Mrs. Maxwell just on the next floor up? That's wild. So this is where the caller says, does all the gibbering and whatever, and says, just like having a wart removed, which is what Peter said to Jess about the abortion. So we're all like, it's Peter. I wondered about this. Now, Jess doesn't really act on this, especially with Lieutenant Fuller. She doesn't say, oh, Lieutenant, this thing about the war is in reference to an abortion that I would like to get. Is that because of the time? Because was abortion legal or not? I should have looked it up and I didn't. And I wondered if you would know, like, was it a shameful thing to do?
Surely this should have fitted into the research you did before watching the film.
The law on Canada.
Maybe if you'd watched the film and realised there was a scene about an abortion in it, then you could have done the research
afterwards. But it's meant to be set in the US. So when was Roe versus Wade, anyone? It was 76. Okay, we're in business. Okay. Thank God. Jesus.
Why don't you write the quiz yourself? The end of this episode.
Is it about abortion? Is it about the Supreme Court overturning basic human rights?
No.
Okay, cool.
No, but you might win if it was.
It was 73 Red versus Wade.
Was it?
So this was, yeah, so this was...
Look at him. He's got a fucking internet in front of him.
An internet,
yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Vicky. I think you'll find, due to my extensive advocacy work, it was 1973.
So it was definitely in the ether.
People were talking about it because it had just happened.
It had just happened. Well, there you go. Anyway, so the phone tapping, that's not going very well. We do a little bit of... It couldn't possibly be Peter because he was at the house when the first call was made. Fine. Then Phil gets it. We assume that all happens off screen.
Who's Phil?
Phyllis, the other housemate with the curly hair.
Yeah.
Then we find out the calls are coming from within the house. But like we said, it's good for the audience because it's new information with a little bit of breadcrumbs before that we would have dismissed. But, you know, would Jess not have heard these crazy levels of noise?
Isn't there a funny bit where John Saxon is interviewing one of them about Claire's disappearance? And the three questions he asks are...
Was she mental?
does she drink a lot?
Yeah.
Does she have any emotional problems? Who else was she seeing apart from Chris?
Yeah, not so where did you see her last? Yeah,
the three questions are, is she a drunk, a psycho or a slut?
Yep.
It's amazing.
That's the 70s though, man. Like, that's true. I mean, you'd be hard pushed now. Like, if you went into a police, oh, Vicky's gone missing. Was she upset about anything? Like, not
us. Yes, every day. Everything, yeah. All the time. Can you narrow it down? Men, probably.
I don't hate men. I think we do need to clear this up because I don't want to get any... I don't want any of that shit coming near me. I don't hate men. I love men. Love them.
I like Jess here, though, because she grabs a poker from the fireplace and goes.
Mm. Yeah, final girl moment.
Yeah.
Nash, that's it. Nash, the one with the most Canadian... The Canadian... This is brilliant. He's told to tell Jess to get out, but because he's been set up as an idiot, you think you're going to fuck this up. Like, you're going to be responsible for her death because you're somehow going to fuck up this one very simple thing. And he does, which is brilliant, which leads, sort of activates her into, like, you know, going after the baddie herself.
How does he mess up then?
He's not supposed to tell her the truth. He's supposed to just say, leave the house, don't go upstairs. And then he says, the call is in the house. Mm. He's just supposed to instruct her to get out without telling her everything.
But really, I mean, if someone said that to any of us, the caller is in the house. She's going back for what? She's going back because she still feels Phil is in there. Phil.
Yeah,
she doesn't know Phil's dead.
Exactly.
So she's going to have to... Yeah, but you wouldn't, would you? You're like, get out of the house. There's a cop outside. Go get him.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, he's
point.
Dead, as it turns out. But at that point, she doesn't know that.
Yeah. But she doesn't know it, which is... I mean, is that a frustration? Because we know it. So we're like, why don't you just leave? Like, maybe we'd understand more if we weren't sure if Barb and Phil were dead. Mm. This is the only moment where I was like, no, I'm not into this in terms of... One of the reasons I don't like slasher films is it's very voyeuristic over, like, women's bodies. And Barb and Phil are piled up together, so he's rearranged their corpses.
Like a tableau.
Yeah, which I'm not into. This film has done so well to not lean into that, even though the thing it's leaning into hasn't happened yet, because it's the first.
But it tells you something about the killer. By doing that, it's like you get the understanding that he's, like... It makes him even worse than he has been already, which is what you want just before the climax, right?
I don't know. I mean, he's already pretty bad. I don't know. I feel like it's one of those moments, which, again, I'm sort of front-loading it all into this film. I just... So many, you know, it's happened so much more later where you're supposed to go, whoa, look at those dead women, and, like, I wonder what that feels like, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I see. I totally understand where you're coming from. For me, it's more of an insight into the twisted mind of the killer than the doing it for the audience's titillation.
Sure. We see Billy's eye, which you said is like the scariest thing. Jess shuts a door on him. As far as I can tell, that's all she does. And that's agony. He's like,
he's in a lot of trouble. Yeah, I was like, what did she do?
I know, but she just traps his fingers, maybe?
Yeah, you've got to show us a shot of a nail sticking out of the door or something for this sword to work.
Ah! one nemesis.
And then we've got a showdown in the cellar, and is it Billy or is it Peter, or are they the same? And then cut to, we don't really get the big moment. She's on the floor, Peter is dead, there's a small piece of blood on his head. We think Jess is dead, but she's alive. Hooray. So we have to get to this next scene because I just can't I really like this film, but I cannot go up with, and it could be because it's of its time, but the authorities, rather than question her, she is a murderer, and yes, it's assumed it was in self-defence, but it is only assumed it was in self-defence because Peter is a man, but fine, okay, I can work with that.
They've made the assumption.
Yeah, he's a serial killer.
They've made the assumption he's a serial killer, yeah. Sure, but there are still so many questions, given that there's two bodies upstairs. So they go, oh, Peter killed Barb and Phil, and Jess killed Peter, correct, which is what we think.
Yeah.
But their job is to investigate the shit out of things and be certain, not just go, he's a man, they're women, he killed them, she killed him, let's go home.
It's Christmas Eve, though. They've got families to go to.
But then they drug her. I just can't go with it. Where they're like, well, she'll be out for 4 hours at least. So 4 hours isn't all night as well?
It's not the drugging her, it's the then leaving her on her own. Yes. Like, imagine if she woke up early, she 3 hours in it, and she's like,
But also, Claire's dad, Mr. fucking Harrison, goes, oh, I feel so dizzy. And they're like, hospital now! Hospital for this man!
He's in shock.
He's in shock. Poor bloke. Presumably in shock because she's just murdered someone. Well, we can just knock her out for a bit, to be honest, and come back in the morning. But Mr. Harrison gets a healthcare professional to take care of him. It's such a weird moment.
It works for the film, though. How scary is it when Jess is in there? Because I'm like, I forgot logic because I was like, this is absolutely terrifying, being left on your own. Yes, ridiculous, but the point where you're like, she's on her own in that house, unconscious, unable to defend herself like she did a moment ago.
Yeah.
And there's a killer still there.
I mean, my problem with it is it's the same. I have the same problem with Halloween. You set up a final girl and then you rob her of everything. Like, she's tooled up, she's done the job, and now she's drugged so that Billy can come and get her.
These were proto-final girls now. You made that movie now and she'd have, like, put a fucking stake through Billy's head.
Yeah, she would. and so we pan through what's left behind, which also happens in Halloween, and there's blood and these suitcases that Mrs. Mack didn't get to take. And then there's some giggling in the attic. The police are fucking awful. They didn't even have a look upstairs.
It's fucking attic.
Oh, please stop. Please stop talking about the attic. I've written it down. Please stop talking about the attic.
I understand what you're saying about a woman in peril. I just obviously find that irksome. The scariest thing to me about the ending of the film is that Billy is unaware that she's been drugged and he's still on the phone. So do you know what I mean? Like, Billy might be able to see. Billy doesn't care who's awake, who's alive, who's whatever. He just wants to be on that phone. That's the scary thing to me. Like, because if he knew she was out cold, he'd be like, well, I'll wait till she wakes up in a minute and then I'll ring her and taunt her. But he's just like, he just needs to talk and get his, you know, do his thing. And he's going to keep ringing until someone picks up. It's not about the girl, it's about him.
So she's safe then?
I felt a bit of comfort in thinking that she was kind of safe because it's not about her, it's about him.
Because a big thing is him wanting attention.
Yeah.
It makes me think of an incel. You know, he immediately starts off with, it's me, Billy. And it's like, take notice of me, hear me, listen to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And I found the ringing of the phone, irrespective of who is or is not alive in the house, that was the most chilling bit.
Well, I mean, Peter, obviously an arsehole, but poor Peter. He gets done for all the murders and he gets killed by his girlfriend.
And he failed his piano recital.
I mean, for such a hateful character, it's a pretty grim ending for him.
Yeah, and then I wonder, are we supposed to think that he'd gone on some rampage and he killed the girl in the park? So that's fine. Yeah. I actually don't know. Like,
he is wearing the same flares as the murderer, killer. So, yeah.
That's it. We're done.
Nice.
Let's do the bits.
Sure.
Chris, what was your best scene?
I'm torn between two. I was going to wait for you to do yours.
I can come back.
I think Barb's death is brilliantly shot. I think that's very effective, but I'm going to go for that ending with Billy in the attic. For me, it's not even the phone ringing, it's him sort of singing the nursery rhyme.
Yeah.
It's just a chilling ending.
And you?
Funny, Barb's death is what I have as well, with the glass unicorn statue. It's one of those that really works because, like you said, you don't see a lot. You certainly don't see the unicorn statue going into her, but it works because it feels like you are seeing that. Like the psycho death. You never see the knife, you never see anything going in. But again, I was just like, that's nasty. And I don't feel we talked enough about this man on this episode, but never mind. Any scene with Doug McGrath as Sergeant Nash.
Yeah.
He is hilarious. His face makes me laugh. When I close my eyes and think about Doug McGrath's face, he's just brilliant in this. Like, as the stupid desk sergeant, fellatio, sir. It's like,
but I thought
wow.
He looks flustered. So I thought he knew what fellatio is, but he's like, well, I'm not going to tell her she's lying and maybe it is a new exchange. And then later on, when he says, oh, it's something dirty, that you get that man so much, like, he would think that's dirty. Like, he wouldn't want it, anything to do with it. I thought that was brilliant.
I mean, apart from John Saxon a little bit, the men in this film are incredibly ineffective.
Yeah.
And the sisters have to do it for themselves. And I quite like that aspect of it as well. That seems quite ahead of its time.
Yeah. Mine is, so it's weird that it's not the same as yours. It's the first phone call, because it felt, I think they're hard to write from, if you're a man writing that, to understand a woman's perspective in that. Like, I don't know, it's easy for them to go, oh my God, that's so gross, and put the phone down. But really, there's a part of you that is transfixed when someone is talking in that way. Like, we have talked about this before, but I've had an obscene phone call and, like, flashes of
have school. You really?
Yeah.
They were big in the 80s.
They were, yeah. And it
I think
their
mobile phones kind of wiped them out now, yeah. But they were big in the 80s.
No, I never had one.
Yeah, and it's like that. Like, but you put the phone down because it was a child. And then we had like a flasher at school and stuff like that. And you're not grown up enough to humiliate them. So it was quite cathartic that Barb takes charge and does it. But there is a bit of you that's like, this is so wrong, that you're like, oh. Like, just transfixed by it a little bit, because you're hearing words that you know are bad and stuff like that. And you're too young to sort of process the threat of it. And I don't know, I always think of sorority girls in the 70s as a little bit more innocent. Like, they're sort of more shocked by it, apart from Barb. I just thought it was really, really well done. And it's good because it's the rug pull later, because the next phone call is just going to be the same. And it hits you harder because it's not. It's terrifying stuff. So, there. Yeah. What's your most valuable whatever, Alex?
So, it's going to follow on from your best scene, the first phone call. My most valuable whatever is actually a whatever this week, which is the conceit of the obscene phone calls that the house keeps getting. And the phone calls in general, even when they stop being obscene and are just scary, I just think they're brilliant. I think the way they're executed in the film is brilliant. Rather than just heavy breathing, the gibberish, the nonsense that comes down that phone call. I was watching it on my own and I was genuinely unnerved and scared by those phone calls.
Well, I'll do my next, because it's Nick Mancuso for doing those voices. And there were other people that did, like Bob Clark did a few as well, but broadly him, because they are fucking terrifying. Imagine the audition where he's like, have you got anything? Yeah, listen to this.
Yeah, he stood on his head, as you said, to compress the thorax. And he also said he went into a trance-like state when he was doing it. And in the behind-the-scenes documentary, you see him doing it. And it says on screen, the Billy is watching commentary. Now, I couldn't find evidence of this, but I think somewhere out there might be a commentary over the top of this film of him doing Billy, watching the film in the Billy voice. Yeah.
Amazing.
It's terrifying because it's stream of consciousness, but it's really engaging because you get, you know, you're watching it as a, you know, liking horror films. So you're listening for those key hooks.
Yeah.
So you can't stop listening.
It's as you said, it's Nick Mancuso, it's Bob Clark, there's a woman's voice in there, and they used a new instrument at the time called a harmonizer to detune, to make them sound as human. And I think it's comparable to Gollum. It reminds me of Gollum, because you're trying to figure out if there's more than one person on this phone line as well.
Yeah.
And so it's like Gollum talking to himself. So my MVW is also Nick Mancuso for that reason.
Oh, that's good.
Mm.
And what would you change, Alex?
So, this whole movie is set up as a whodunit. It's a movie where they're leaving breadcrumbs here and there, suggesting that it could be Peter. Could it be the dad? Who is it going to be? And so the fact that we never, ever get a payoff as to who the killer was, I find incredibly, incredibly unsatisfying. I couldn't believe it when it ended. I don't even mind, like, not the killer not being a character we've met before. Even if it's a madman who we see at the end who gets his comeuppance and is revealed, and you're like, oh my God, or you see Billy properly, not just on a lightened image on Reddit, then I want that. I really felt like it was, it almost got there and it just could not stick the landing, because the end of this film is just really, really unsatisfying. I think, you know, it works for the children's story, the horror story, the ghost story it was based on, because that lasts all of 5 minutes. But having invested an hour and 45 in this movie, I need more closure than this offers. So that's my big change.
What about you?
I disagree. I like the unsettling nature of that ending without understanding who Billy is and what his motivation is. But I'm with you. The reason I said earlier I think Scream is the best slasher is because it's a whodunit every movie.
Yeah.
And so there's a mystery that you've got to unravel, which the other slashers don't have. So I think we need more suspects here because Peter's our only suspect. As far as I thought, you're saying the dad was a suspect. I'm saying make the dad a suspect. Mm. So I feel like the dad should show up with the mum and the mum can do the job of the grieving while the dad just seems weird and maybe isn't around when certain things happen. And so that's not the story they were trying to tell. I understand that. But it would have been interesting if there were two more suspects alongside Peter.
And you'd then still have the ending not reveal who the killer
maybe
was.
Maybe so. I like this ending. I'm not saying I would change it. I think that would be a direction you could go in.
But your version actually makes me even more frustrated because then it's like it's even leaning more into the whodunit and providing you with more suspects and then still going, and actually that was a waste of your time and energy because you don't know.
I like the not knowing though. Mm. I also, the musician said this, it needs an iconic horror theme. And in an interview with him, he said, if I'd known this was going to be such a big deal, I would have worked harder on the score. He said, there's bits I like in the score, but there's bits that I don't like. And he said, I just, you know, I wish I'd had more time.
Is that your change then?
More suspects. Yeah.
So two things. I think Phil should get her own death scene and maybe she nearly wins because she... Throughout this, she's kind of like resourceful, steady. She's not drunk. She tells Barb to go to bed. But apart from her having a cold, that's about as much as you know about her. So I'd like Phil to get her own scene where you see the death, but maybe she's the one that nearly survives but doesn't. But also, and I understand, I am conscious that this is just modern eyes. I don't think you should drug your heroine at the end and take her out of the action. I think you have to give her the moment that she's earned. And she wakes up and she's possibly even been faking it because she understands that these police officers are fucking inept or whatever. And if you've made a bit more of the friendship, the trouble with sorority houses, because we don't have them, we don't know if they really are friends or if it's just like housemates, flatmates that you don't really know. If it was like, these are my girls and this fucking nutter in the attic has cost me everything... And now the police have gone because I've pretended that I'm drugged and I'm all innocent and I'm asleep.
And I've already killed one person.
And I've killed one person. I've got a taste for it. And I'm not really asleep. And now, fucker, now I'm coming for you. And that should be the final shot. It's her waking up. Ding! I'm not asleep. The police will never figure it out because they're stupid or whatever. And she goes to get him.
Can she do a monologue about who he is as she's walking towards the attic with an axe? Because then that ticks mine and your box.
Yeah, maybe.
It's like, I've worked out who you are, Billy.
One thing that connects them is the remake of Black Christmas, the first remake, and the remake Halloween are two films where they really explain who the villain is in quite a boring way, I think. So watch that, because then you get everything, the whole backstory and all the motivation for the killer. And it's much less interesting.
All right, that's Black Christmas done. Merry, Merry Christmas. Do you want to do a quiz?
I've written a quiz.
Oh, all right then. Wow. What are the chances?
Okay, this quiz is called Kill Counts.
Oh, all right.
So I've used a website called Geek Insider, which has figured out how many kills each slasher has done across their movies. Mm. It was from 2019, so it's up to that point. So I'm going to tell you, to be clear, I'm going to tell you the name of the slasher, and I'm going to give you how many movies and up to which one. And then you've got to give me the number of people the slasher killed. This character, not other people in the film, this character killed.
Closest answer wins.
Closest answer wins. And we'll go one to the other. So you both get a guess.
Okay.
Obviously. So Vicky.
Yeah.
Chucky. We're talking 8 movies up to the most recent reboot.
8 films. 40 people.
Alex.
38.
44 points to Vicky. You're up first this time, Alex. Pinhead. We're talking 9 films, and this doesn't include the recent reboot that hasn't even come out here yet.
Okay. I'm saying 29.
Vicky.
38.
38 is correct. on the pin.
Oh, my God. I can see it slipping away.
Vicky.
Yep.
Jason Voorhees.
Uh-huh.
11 films up to and including the reboot. How many kills?
85.
Alex.
80.
171.
What?
I mean, he's killed more than anyone. He is. He
I just
is
can't
the man.
Imagine 171.
There was that bus.
Alex, back to you.
Oh, God.
This is a big one now, or a little one. Because it's Leprechaun. And there have been 8 Leprechaun films.
72.
56.
Point to Vicky, 51.
Oh, my God!
Vicky.
Yeah.
Freddy Krueger.
Yep.
9 films up to the reboot.
I just need one back now. Otherwise, it's going to be, I think, the first time.
We're getting close to whitewash. Yep.
40.
Alex.
48.
It's 42. Vicky gets it.
Oh, my God.
Alex, this is the last one.
Oh, my God.
Potential whitewash happening.
Yeah.
Michael Myers. 10 films up to and including the 2018 reboot. So not the last 2 movies. So 10 films. Michael Myers, how many?
59.
Fuck it. 58.
Point to Alex.
Yes! Oh my God, I can't believe I'm chuffed about and not a whitewash.
It's 105.
Is it?
Because it's Michael Myers.
Congratulations.
And Dan. Alex, you would have liked the tiebreak question. We'll do it now.
Yep.
How many people has Jaws killed? Vicky, you can go second. Alex, how many people has Jaws killed?
Jeez, 20. 20.
I'm not going to ask you, Vicky, because it's 20.
Yeah! Oh my God! Yeah! Woo!
Just to be clear, who won that quiz?
That's the real quiz. That's the real quiz.
Who won the quiz? Chris.
We go outside and we throw a kettle over the studio.
Chris, listen.
She's getting really emotional and angry.
Let's let the listeners decide.
Yeah.
No.
George, did I get it right on with George?
He's not speaking.
20.
Wesley, shut up.
You won 5-1.
Thank you.
Very, very well done.
Thank you.
Exactly 20, though. Jaws, exactly amazing. Right, congratulations, Victoria.
Thanks.
Well done. What's the clue? It's still you, V. It's your choices next week. What's the clue?
This is a bit weak. Next week's episodes are all relative.
Nice. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Great.
Oh, thank you.
They're
lovely.
All relative.
Yeah.
They're literally all relative. It's
They're
good.
Literally all both
it's very
relative.
Good. It's very good.
They're all relative.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Thanks.
It's great. Okay, then. That is your clue for next week. There'll be another coming your way on our Twitter, where we are at ClashPod. And that is it for this episode. A quick reminder, if you haven't done already, or you have a friend who likes movies, or lots of friends, that would be great. Please ask them to subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever they get their podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at ClashPod. And also check out our brand spanking new YouTube channel, Clash of the Titles, on YouTube. We'll be back on Thursday, where we're trying to survive a night of hell in Haddonfield with Halloween. Bye bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.